They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
We are a group of students from Brandywine Middle/High School in Niles, Michigan, and we began investigating this case at the start of the school year in August as part of our 6-hour investigative journalism class. Each of the 20 or so students in our class were tasked with finding a case that sparked our interest, something we could bring to light.
That's when I stumbled upon Stephen's case and brought it to my group. From there, our team was formed, and the research began.
Our group leader, Lexi, stepped up to take charge with the help of Bailey and Destiny, myself and Asia, who initially found the case. Together, we've dedicated countless hours to digging into Stephen's story, exploring his family history, his private life, and the numerous speculations that have emerged over the years.
Despite facing several setbacks during our research, we have remained committed to uncovering the truth. Through interviews and phone calls with family members, law enforcement, and experts, we have tried to piece together the puzzle of Stephen's disappearance. Along the way, we've encountered many leads, some promising, others less so. There have been dead ends, but that hasn't stopped us. We continue to consult crime experts, learning how to conduct investigative work in the hope that we can finally uncover the missing pieces.
Our investigation is far from finished. There is still much more to be done, but we are determined to bring some clarity to this case. We are committed to finding the truth, not just for Stephen's family, but for all of you, our listeners, who deserve to know what happened. To this day, his sister Jody is still doing tons of advocacy for this case. She just wants to bring Stephen, or Stevie as she refers to him, home. Stephen grew up in Benton Township, a suburban area near Benton Harbor, Michigan. Though Benton Harbor is typically thought of as a rougher area, this crime did not go into Benton Township.
He lived in a smaller neighborhood surrounded by his family. A part of this neighborhood still remains. However, some houses have been demolished to make an airport. He would often go down the street to his sister's house or play with his cousins who had also lived nearby.
He didn't have a ton of friends in school, occasionally getting picked on, but was a good student. He loved reading and drawing. His cousin, Jason, remembers these drawings well.
So I was a well-known artist, a tattoo artist. I took an apprenticeship when I was younger, and I was a upcoming artist who was being really recognized for my work, and I was doing wall murals and all kinds of stuff, so I was just a natural artist. And Stephen was so talented. He amazed me at the things the boy could draw. So I wasn't raised around the family too much because of some of their back history, but I would go by to visit my great aunt who lived with the family, with Stephen's mom and dad. So I would go over there to visit my Aunt Linda, and Stephen would always come running, want to show me some of his artwork, and it was jaw-dropping. He was just a profound artist for being 12 years old. But at that time, he was probably maybe 9 or 10 years old, and he was drawing things that was way beyond his level of being able to draw. So that was something that always stuck out to me, was his artistic abilities.
While interviewing his sister, we got to look at some of his drawings. They were all very creative, and he was also a very talented boy. She also told us about how much he loved playing outside.
His parents had the early 2000s mentality of be home when the street lights come on, and he typically stuck to this rule. This was also a very common mindset for the time, although many parents now don't agree with it. However, his parents were not negligent. Him and his siblings were always taken care of.
And while it was something they would never expect to happen, they also were not oblivious to the possibility of children disappearing. In fact, Stephen actually had an identification bracelet with his name and information. Tragically, he had grown too much for it to fit, and his mother had not ordered a new one yet.
There were places he had liked to explore near his house, despite his family members asking him not to go too far. He often took his dogs with him when he went out to play. He also had two close friends that were also neighbors. They'd lived down the street with their mother and her boyfriend at the time. He often went to go play with them. He was also close with his parents and siblings. It wasn't unlikely for his little brother to join him while he was playing outside.
However, when he disappeared, his little brother was sick at the time and stayed home. The outcome of that might have been drastically different if his brother had accompanied him.
The area where Stephen lived was described as being quite diverse, with distinct differences depending on which direction you walked. On one end of the street, there were rows of well-maintained houses, while the other end featured older or more run-down houses in need of repair.
Despite this contrast, the neighborhood had a strong sense of community. Everyone knew each other and the residents were friendly, fostering a close-knit environment. Stephen was fortunate to have three cousins and a few friends living on the same street, which meant he was rarely far from familiar faces. He often walked to his sister's house, located just around the corner. The community was considered semi-safe.
While drug and alcohol use was common among some residents, incidents of violent crime were distinctly uncommon, and the overall crime rate in Benton Township at the time was relatively low. Many parents believed their children were safe in the area, and no one expected anything as shocking as a disappearance, let alone one involving a child, to occur.
Jason had then told us what he thought about the area.
The neighborhood was definitely a rough neighborhood. It was known for a lot of drug activity, violence, racist issues, race issues. It was not a great place to grow up. And them tearing down that part of the neighborhood to put the airport in was probably one of the best things that happened to that part of the township.
The area is considered a high-risk zone with the constant use of substances. Still, there was no major issue with kidnappings, murders, or similar crimes at the time. Despite the potential risks associated with drug and alcohol use in the area, Stephen's parents allowed him the freedom to roam and wander for hours.
Additionally, Stephen had dogs that he frequently walked around the neighborhood, giving him and his pets a strong familiarity with the area, making the possibility of him getting lost highly unlikely.
Stephen Street also had direct access to a highway, which meant that plenty of people, including strangers, could pass through that area, whether as a shortcut or to reach another road. This added an unsettling element, as it exposed Stephen to individuals who may not have been a part of the community.
When news broke of a child going missing from their tight-knit street, it was a profound shock to everyone. It was an event that defined the community's sense of security and left the residents grappling with disbelief.
Jody's husband, Paul Johnson, who grew up on the same street as her, recalled the fear that gripped the community. Around the time of Stephen's disappearance, he remembered his mother giving him a bracelet with his name, address, and contact information, a bracelet similar to the one Stephen himself once wore.
Clearly, the disappearance of Stephen left the community deeply shaken and exposed vulnerabilities that no one had anticipated.
Like mentioned previously, Stephen's family was close with each other and they cared for one another, especially through hard times. They had stayed close over the years, even when tough times struck the family. Though Stephen's disappearance wasn't the first struggle they had gone through.
The family that lived in Benton Township was separate from the family in Kentucky and Wisconsin. The Michigan part of the family was made up of Stephen's mother, Cheryl Ganzak, who sadly passed away in 2021. Stephen's father, Stephen Kraft, who also has passed in 2021. Stephen's sister, Jody Johnson, who at the time had the last name Bob and was technically Stephen Jr.'s half-sister. And Stephen's younger brother, Edward Kraft. The family also lived with their dogs, Molly and Chopper.
though these differences in blood didn't make the family any different from others. They all functioned as if they were any other traditional family. Though, like any family, they had their struggles, even before Stephen's disappearance. Stephen's parents had their struggles with alcohol and drug use, which can make for a difficult home life. However, when talking to Jody, it didn't seem like she could recall this causing any issues in their home life growing up.
His parents were very friendly and often invited other people over. Thankfully, the substance use eventually slowed down to accommodate for their new family life. Jody moved out at 15 to stay in Michigan due to a part of her family leaving for Kentucky, but had lived around the corner from the rest of the family on her own with her now ex-husband. She was still close with everyone despite the fact that she had lived in a different house.
Stephen would even make the effort to visit her just about every day, even if it would get him in trouble sometimes. There was another part of the family that hadn't lived in Michigan. Cheryl's two other sons, Ian Bob and Tyler Ganzak, had lived in Wisconsin at the time, where Cheryl moved from. Though the family still stayed close and made an effort to communicate with each other, they would make sure to contact one another, and they were close-knit, even having three cousins who lived on the street.
Because of this closeness, everyone usually knew what was going on with each other, and that's what made Stephen's disappearance even more alarming. Stephen was said to have went out to play with his friends across the street. He left in cargo pants, a teal and purple jacket, and black boots. This day in particular was a very cold, slushy day in February. Michigan winters can get harsh, especially with Benton Township's proximity to the lake. This means they get lake effect snow.
The clouds over the lake pick up moisture and drop it on the land near the lake. This means there can be lots of snow. On this particular day, Stephen's little brother was sick, probably with the flu or a cold.
Stephen was also set to return to school the next day. It would have been the end of his 5-day suspension after he got in a fight defending himself at school, though this wasn't something that usually happened. He was allowed to go out and do what he usually did, explore. Stephen told his mother that he was going to play down the street with a few of his friends and his two dogs.
One was an older dog around the age of 9, and that was Molly. And the other was a German Shepherd puppy, Chopper. These dogs were described as smart and protective of Stephen, and they had been their family's dog for quite some time.
His little brother wasn't going to join him today, as he was staying home sick. While he was gone, his mom cooked dinner and wanted him to return before it was ready. She told him he was supposed to get back around 8 p.m. She didn't think anything of it, as Stephen typically played across the street with different neighbors or cousins. A couple of his friends were two young girls who lived at 2213 Holly Street. The house they stayed at had a backyard that led out onto Milo Street, a street connecting right onto Red Arrow Highway. He knew roads rather well and shouldn't have gotten lost.
He usually returned by the time his mother asked, and even if he didn't, it was never intentional to stay out later than told. Usually he would just get distracted. When Stephen had left the house, he took his dogs with him. They went with him almost every time he left. Stephen would be seen with his dogs for the last time around 7 that night. No one has seen or heard from him since. However, no one has stopped trying to find him.
The family had waited for him after dinner was prepared and everything was finished. Edward, Stephen's younger brother, was still very sick late into the night, so that only put more stress on the family. Their son wasn't home yet, and their other son was sick and stress was mounting.
They should have been in bed, but worry plagued them as it had been dark for hours, and at this point it was only getting colder as the night progressed. They had hoped that he may have gotten caught up at a friend's house and just hadn't told them, but as it approached 1 a.m., that didn't seem to be the case.
They had told him countless times to not go and play by the pond, and him falling into it was their biggest concern at the time. Stephen hadn't taken his hat or gloves, and the only coat he had was a thinner Charlotte Hornets basketball jacket. He wasn't equipped to face the cold, and especially not the darkness that comes in the early hours of winter.
There was another thing worrying the family, the dogs. There was the older dog, Molly, who knew its way home and hadn't been seen at all. Molly should have found her way home by now if Stephen had gotten hurt or even lost her.
Topper the puppy was a worry too, as it should have been running around if Stephen had lost hold of it. But no one had reported seeing a lost dog that night. Jody was especially concerned about Steven as he hadn't come to her at all this evening, which was what he usually did. On the day he did come, he was greeted with a warning of listening to his parents.
They knew his adventurous spirit may have led him to other places too, which would only make the search more difficult. Hours had passed now since dinner, and it was too late for them to not worry, and they had called the police at 1 a.m. in hopes of getting help to find their son. However, the police may have been overwhelmed with a variety of other calls that night. We received call logs and discovered that there were two separate calls for missing juveniles at 12 a.m. We don't know if these were two different calls for Steven or if there were two other missing kids that night as they were from different addresses, but we hope to learn more as we continue investigating. The family began to search for him themselves, but found nothing. Panic set in amongst the family as time went on and the situation was still unknown.
The uncertainty made everything worse. They didn't know if the younger brother, Edward, was in any danger. Was this a personal attack or just something that spontaneously happened? They had no information, and the idea of losing another child scared them. They kept Edward hidden from the media and everyone who asked about the family. They never brought him up to anyone, even if they were prompted to by people who wanted to know more. Edward stayed out of sight and out of the light as the media watched the family.
There was a reason for this. A kidnapper named Michael Delvin, he kidnapped one boy on October 6, 2002, named Sean Hornbeck in Richwood, Missouri, just 7 hours south of Benton Township. He was known to be in the area at the time Stephen went missing, and the police didn't even know Delvin had kidnapped Sean, meaning there was a kidnapper on the loose.
From the information we gathered from the previous interview with Jody that we had a few months back, sometime in October, we have a detailed description of how the night went, with the police and the search around the perimeter of the house and pond where Stephen would visit. She waited with the rest of the family since they called the police station at sometime around 12 to 1 a.m., like previously mentioned.
Jody explained to the officer during the call what she knew about what had taken place, that he had gone out to walk his dogs and never returned home. They knew that Stephen loved hanging around the pond despite their concerns, so that was the first place Jody and the officer thought to check for him.
The rest of Stephen's family also had worries that he could have fallen in as well. On their way to said pond, there were no footsteps but their own that they left in the snow, yet they still went to check things out. When they checked the layer of ice on the pond, it had not been broken or cracked when the police officer searched briefly with a flashlight he had brought. With that being said, that ruled out the possibility of Stephen falling in as everyone had thought. So they walked back to the house and did a brief search there as well.
Jody also gave us some information that later on there were still some mixed feelings surrounding the pond itself and the effort from the police. So they took the initiative upon themselves to do a further investigation, hiring a diver using their own scuba gear to go into the cold and dirty water of the unkempt pond just to do a double check, and it was reported that they found nothing.
Hi, I'm Asia.
Hi, I'm Lexi.
Hi, I'm Layla.
Hi, I'm Destiny.
And this is our roundtable discussion. So I found the case and was immediately intrigued by it. And then I brought it up. What were everyone's opinions when first hearing about it?
Honestly, I thought there wasn't much to it, to be honest. That's why I was a little scared approaching it. There just didn't seem to be a lot going on for the case.
I was very excited. Because I was excited for the class.
I don't know. I just needed a case. So it sounded interesting. And I was like the last one to pick. So I was like, okay.
Okay. There really wasn't a lot. There were a few news stories about it. But it was really just updating on anniversaries of how long he'd been missing. And then all of them were... We don't know what's going on. There's not a lot of information. And another 10 years has passed.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was researching, it was just like the same thing over and over and over from like every website. So it was like hard to like get new information on it or like find a lead like to research this to like look further into the case.
And why are there so many last names of the family?
There's so many last names.
Confused me.
Stephen Kraft is apparently a very common name. We've run into it like so many times.
While researching, there were so many times. There was like 7 p.m., 8 p.m., 6 p.m. Thankfully, getting Jody in, to clarify, helped. Because, yeah. I mean, you have something that hasn't gone anywhere in like 23 years, at least publicly gone anywhere, for 23, 24 years. It's not gonna light up for that long.
It's also crazy to me how much Jody, like when we were talking to her, like remembered like details and stuff, even though like it was so long ago. Was anybody nervous when Jody came in for the interview the first time?
Not really.
I was excited.
I was nervous. Like, I didn't even talk. I was just writing stuff down. I didn't really know what to say.
But with the details, there was a lot that went on that night. And for like a family to go through that in such, like, it was what, 6 to like 12 that happened. I mean, that's not a really long period of time. It's 6 hours. 6 hours seems like a lot, but
yeah, that's a short 6 hours when your son is missing.
Mm-hmm. That's short 6 hours when you're doing things, your son's missing. At that point, you don't know your son's missing.
Yeah.
So the shock of it all, I probably couldn't handle it well. I need everything planned out. If anything happens outside of that, it's not working out.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's so crazy to me, too. He was set to return to school literally the next day.
Yeah.
Like, their whole life would have gone back to completely normal. And instead, it did not. It went the other way.
Yeah. The 5-day suspension was really weird, especially because, like, it seems like it might have some involvement with it. But from what really happened, it doesn't seem like it has anything. It's just a horrible set of circumstances that all happened to line up.
The 5-day suspension was, like, my first, like, something has to be going on there in the case. Like, my first, like, I have to, like, look more into this. Because it was just so crazy to me, like, the way it lined up and felt like that.
Because, if something like that happens, especially with a kid who's usually not confrontational or gets in trouble, you think that it'd be a part of what happened next, but it really didn't have anything to do, which it helped with being able to dig into details more and rule things out, as that really doesn't fit here. It helped. A lot of dead ends helped, but they weren't exactly helpful in themselves.
I want to know, like, just how shocked the family was, and, like, at what point were they, like, for each individual member, when did it get real for them? When were they, like
oh, we crap, have to- my brother's missing.
Yeah, exactly. When were they, like, oh, we got to figure this out.
Right.
Yeah, because they thought he just went out to walk the dogs, and he was probably, like, at a friend's house or something, then he just never came home.
And that's such a normal day-to-day thing, too. Mm-hmm. It's not like he was doing something out of the ordinary, he was going somewhere new. It was his daily routine.
I find it odd that, with them not knowing where he was, that there wasn't really anybody else who was like, oh, yeah, we know where he is. There weren't a lot of people who were like, knew much. And there still isn't. And people, even if they did know anything, they're not talking about it, which isn't great.
Yeah, especially like since everybody was so close in the neighborhood and like they stayed, like so much of his family like stayed in like a tight area together and that nobody knew what happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when, like, the police came down. That's one road. You have one road to look on. But that doesn't mean you ignore the rest of the area either. But there was also a lot going on that night in terms of things happening. Like we said, it's not a high crime area, but things happen there. Things happen anywhere. So with having your attention divided that much, and especially with cold weather, you have other things in your ear. You're just trying to do your job. People are telling you to go different places. I think it'd make it a little harder to look, especially because there was a lot of open field and a lot of wooded area around there.
Yeah. I still find it funny how one dog came back and the other one didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two dogs.
That's weird to me, because who takes a little boy with two dogs? That should, in theory, like we think of that as a society, you're walking with a dog, you're 10 times safer.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks about that.
Yeah.
Like single women living in apartments, they get a dog, they feel safer. This little boy had two dogs and something still went wrong.
Nothing like that ever happened there. Did that change anything within like how they work in the police department, or were they just because it feels like they're not doing a lot. You 23 years and we're still 23, 24 and we're still nowhere.
Yeah, it's insane. I don't believe anyone just straight up disappears. He's somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. But nobody's saying anything. Nobody's finding anything and making it public, at least. And...
which, of course, their strategy to not making things public if they don't have the full story yet. But on the flip side, if they were to make certain things they might know public, it would be much easier.
Yeah, more information.
To find more ideas and have new eyes on the case.
It just seems like they just want to forget about everything, the whole case, period.
Yeah, I haven't seen any, like, recent reportings for it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, not even just information, but just bringing it up again. I haven't seen much.
Me either. No, there's a lot of stuff for the, like, the 10-year anniversaries and the 20-year anniversaries. But aside from the anniversaries, there's hardly any new eyes looking at the case.
With the pond being such an area of focus and, like, news stories, even from what Jody was telling us about them searching the pond, that seems to be the only place of interest for anybody, which is an issue. If you look somewhere once and only look there ever, you're not going to get anywhere. There could be plenty of places they're looking at. We just don't know.
Because they won't give us any information.
Because the Benton Township Police Department. You give us nothing. You reply to nothing. You answer nothing.
Nothing.
I understand keeping things private, but you couldn't, like, even respond. For the whole community, it's not something you'd expect to happen. And, I mean, a lot of people lived there. A lot of different kinds of people lived there. So I wonder if that caused any like, moves. It feels so, like, removed from the community that it doesn't fit their daily life. So to take someone and remove them from their schedule like that, it had to have affected a lot more people than just Stephen's family.
I think more than anything, people's sense of security was completely shattered, because as it righteously should have been. I mean, a little boy went missing. That's horrific.
Yeah, and there were probably, like, a lot of little kids in the neighborhood. They're probably like, oh, my kid could be next, you know? If it happened to him, like, it could happen to anybody.
Underestimated Stephen Craft was researched, written, and produced by Asia, Lexi, Destiny, Bailey, and Layla. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Bailey. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping us fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.